Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Yes, and this is a mini episode.
It's a little mini.
It's also International Women's Day.
I thought it was tomorrow.
Well, when this episode comes out.
Oh, that's true.
Will be International Women's Day.
Adoy.
Yes. So happy International Women's Day to all of our listeners.
Yes, happy International Women's Day.
We hope you're having a lovely day. Okay, so I have some not-so-lovely things to talk about today.
Yeah, neither of mine are happy.
Mine are not happy either. Okay, so I'll jump right in.
Yeah.
The California Attorney General, Xavier Becerra, announced Tuesday that he will not be filing criminal charges against the two Sacramento police officers who killed Stephon Clark.
Yes.
So if you guys remember, that was last year, I think maybe last May, we talked about it on this podcast. Stephon Clark was a black man who was killed in his own backyard or his grandmother's backyard, and the officers said that they shot him because they thought he had a gun, when actually he just had a cell phone, and he was in his own backyard whenever he was charged upon by these police officers.
And it was like his grandmother that witnessed it, right? Is that the
same believe,
story?
Yes. Okay. She was inside. So the California Department of Justice conducted an independent investigation into the shooting death, and Stephon Clark was 22 years old, and they said, "Our investigation has concluded that no criminal charges against the officers involved in the shooting can be substantiated." And that was Xavier Becerra who said that.
I don't understand the reasoning to how it can't go further.
They gave some reasonings. They said, looking at the body cam footage, that he acted suspiciously. He came upon the officers at like a high rate of speed, and that an object in his hand, judging by what they could see in the video footage,
could have been
looked shiny. And that's all they could really tell from the video, is that the object looked shiny. So they're saying, I guess, that the actions of the police were justified in this case.
Great.
So immediately demonstrations started popping up essentially right after this came out. In Sacramento, on Wednesday, UC Davis students sat in protest. They had a sit-in at their school or at the Capitol, I'm not entirely sure. And then today, which is Thursday, yesterday for you listeners, 250 students from Sacramento City College, as well as C.K. McClatchy, McClatchy High School, walked out of class and marched to the Capitol today. So there was a walkout. Sacramento police said that they will now decide whether the officers violated any policies or procedures. So they're not facing any criminal charges, but they still could receive some kind of disciplinary action from the police.
I mean, not what you would want.
Not what I want, and also not holding out a ton of hope that that will happen.
Yeah.
Either it seems pretty likely that they're probably going to get away with nothing more than a slap on the wrist, if anything.
Yeah, with what you just said, I feel like they're going to hold on to that evidence, you know?
Right. I mean, and I have not seen the body cam footage, so I can't say. However, it seems like they acted very brashly.
It just seems like too easy. Like, it just seems to me like all of the stereotypical, we thought he had a gun kind of thing.
Well, I mean, it's just one of those things. I think we talked about this at the time, where the expectation for the civilian or like the pedestrian is higher almost than the expectation of behavior for police officers.
Agreed.
It's like, we oftentimes use the excuse that these police officers were scared. He was coming at me quickly. He had something shiny in his hand.
Yeah.
And completely dismiss, like, do you not think Stephon Clark was scared? He's in his own backyard.
And the cops are coming after
him. And you don't necessarily know that they're cops. You know, like, you're in your own backyard. You're taken off guard. I mean, his reaction could have been one of self-defense.
I agree.
And he wasn't given enough time to assess what was happening.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is that, like, I just have an issue with when it comes to police being so quick to use their guns. You know what I mean? I feel like there are other, like, they can pull them out, but actually using them, I feel like there has to be
a better way to de-escalate the situation.
Yeah,
for
and
sure.
I feel like that's a pretty, like, common thing when you go into, like, you know, a school shooting, or if you're, you know, approaching somebody who is violent, where it is important to kind of, like, de-escalate the situation and not just immediately use deadly force.
Well, and I believe they're trained in that, which is what I'm assuming whenever they say that they're going to look and see if any policies weren't adhered to.
Right.
I'm assuming that that's what they're talking about, is that they need to look and see if they did everything possible to de-escalate the situation, which I don't think they did.
No.
But even
if... It sounds like it all happened pretty fast.
It all happened pretty quickly, and even if they receive some kind of disciplinary action for that, I don't think it's going to be more than a slap on the wrist. And Stephon Clark's mother, when she was asked to comment about what was going on with the protests, she basically said, hey, you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah.
So she was like, do it, protest, stand on tables, make as much noise as possible, because this is fucked up.
Yeah.
You know? And just very sad. Stephon Clark was a father. He was 22 years old.
He's
a baby, you know, so it's very, very sad.
And so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Want to hear something else that's really shitty?
Yes.
So have you seen the picture of the high schoolers at a party with the red Solo cups in the shape of a swastika?
Sure have.
Okay. So you know me and my World War II fascinated mind, especially my fascination with Anne Frank. I was on BuzzFeed today, and I saw an article saying that Eva Schloss, who was a Holocaust survivor and Anne Frank's stepsister, is going to be meeting with them today, Thursday, with the teens from Costa Mesa.
Okay.
Regarding their anti-Semitic photo on Snapchat. What did you think I was
going to
say?
Oh, no, no. I mean, that's what I thought you were going to say, but I'm kind of like, this woman shouldn't have to take time out of her fucking life to talk to these shitty teens.
No, like, she shouldn't, but I think that what she's doing is really noble, and we'll get to some of the reasoning why she's doing it. So, just some background on the photo. The photo was from a party on March 2nd, showed a group of teens posing with Nazi salutes during what appeared to be a drinking game, kind of like beer pong.
Yeah, so they're red Solo cups in the shape of a swastika on the table, and then a bunch of white bros doing the Nazi salute around
the table. Even some women, too. And then there were comments made like Master Race and German Rage Cage. And then there was a conversation that they got on Snapchat, which included comments such as, phone's gonna die, just like the Jews.
So fucking edgy.
It's so stupid.
Fucking edgy. I mean, it's beyond stupid. It's like, I don't know. I understand, like, their brains are still developing, X, Y, Z. I did all kinds of dumb shit whenever I was a teenager. Like, I get that. Like, I get all of that. And I understand that. And I understand that we cannot view teenagers through the same lens that we view adults. Because their brains aren't developed entirely.
Yeah.
However, like, it's deliberately hateful, and I have a tendency not to give a pass just because they're young kids. I think that they should feel full consequences.
Yeah.
And I think that their parents should feel consequences.
That's what I felt like. I was like, I would feel awful being those parents. So they attend the Newport Harbor and Estancia High Schools. The school district has interviewed more than 24 students.
In what state? Sorry?
This is California. It's Costa Mesa.
Oh, fucking great.
Right? So the superintendent of the school district, Fred Navarro, says, while these actions did not occur on any school campus or school function, we condemn all acts of anti-Semitism and hate in all their forms. Some students issued apologies, right, saying their actions were disgusting, appalling, and irresponsible.
Okay, if you thought that, you wouldn't have done it.
After
like,
the
that's
fact,
the thing,
yeah.
is like, if you thought that, you wouldn't have done it. Even if I was white, I can say this with certainty, that because I was raised primarily by white people, so I can say this with you know, pretty clear certainty, that if I was in a situation that was similar to that, even as a teenager, I would have walked out.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, because I understand peer pressure and all that, and I'm not saying that I would have stood on a table and been like, you guys are all fucking pieces of shit.
Right, but you would have removed yourself
from
the
situation. But I would have removed myself from the situation, because I know that it's appalling and disgusting.
Exactly.
Like, I wouldn't have participated.
Yeah.
So, what? I don't believe you. I believe that you got in trouble.
And now
and
your
tails
are between your legs.
Yeah. Have told you you need to issue an apology, because this could ruin your fucking future.
Yeah, Max actually showed me the picture, and he was like, well, none of them are getting into college. And I was like, yeah.
I mean, yeah, bare minimum, even if they do, it's like, you can't do anything high profile ever.
Ever.
Because this will come back to bite you in the ass.
Yeah.
And it's not like, and like, this was shitty anyway, so don't take it the wrong way, like I'm giving this guy a pass, but when we talked about the governor of Virginia blackface. In blackface in the 80s, it's not even like that even, because yes, that was still fucking racist, but back then they thought they could be racist and nothing would happen to them. It's like, yeah. This is 2019.
And you're you on fucking social media.
Knew yeah. that like, in 2019, you can't do this shit.
Right, exactly. So Eva Schloss is 89 years old, and like I said, she was going to meet with the group of students today, and is hopeful, in spite their actions, that they can become advocates of tolerance and understanding. And I'm just like, God, that woman is a
she
fucking saint.
She is a bigger woman than me. Like, yeah, she is. And, real. Like, the only thing that I can think, because this is just where my mind at. Listeners, if you can't tell, I had a really bad day. So this is just kind of like where my mind is at right now. But like, I really hope that they feel such deep shame.
Oh, especially in her
presence.
Seeing her.
In her presence, I hope they feel yeah. the deepest shame.
So she spent 2 years in hiding in the Netherlands before being captured by the Nazis, and she was 15 years old. And so Rabbi Reuven Mintz put out a statement that says, "It's imperative that today's young people come face to face with the consequences of unchecked hatred. Our hope in this meeting, someone who witnessed firsthand the atrocities committed under the same swastika and salute, will help guide these students toward a life of tolerance and acceptance, spreading the message of inclusion and love rather than one of hatred." So I feel like this is, I mean, although it's like, God, lady, you don't have to do this, but in a way it's also like, she's confronting the situation head on, and she's like, no, what you're doing, like, that really happened to me and had a deep effect on my life and my family, as being probably the most famous family to ever come through the Holocaust.
It's absolutely true. Like, she is doing the right thing.
She is, but it's also like, girl, you don't got to do all that. Like,
I mean, I guess for me, what's frustrating about it, not frustrating, but makes my first reaction what it was.
Yeah.
In that, like, I'm just like, this is bullshit. Like, you shouldn't have to do this.
Yeah.
Is that minorities and oppressed peoples oftentimes have to take on that emotional labor.
Exactly.
To educate these people.
Yeah.
And they have to take out, you know, the time, the energy, all of their emotional resources to deal with this shit. Because the only way that these entitled fucking white kids from Costa Mesa can learn anything is by having some kind of, they're so fucking entitled
scared
and selfish
straight.
And they're so selfish that it has to directly affect their lives. They have to meet somebody who sits them down and says, this is why this is hurtful to me, an individual, personally.
Right, but if that's gonna make a difference, and even just reading this article and I think having this conversation in 2019, I feel like what she's doing, as much as it is just, like, such, it's so laborious, I think it's also important for us to realize that, like, this isn't an old thing that doesn't exist anymore. Like, these are beliefs that people still hold. And having her come forward and have this conversation with these kids, I feel like is really important for that generation.
No, I think she's doing the right thing.
But it
I just feel like white people, get your shit together. Like, honestly, people of color and
being self-absorbed.
And minorities and people who are oppressed shouldn't have to do this. Like, you should know, and you do know.
Mm-hmm.
You just choose to ignore it until somebody is looking into your fucking face and saying, like, my whole family was murdered under the symbol that you're saluting.
Yep.
Like, and they know that.
They know
just
that.
Don't care.
You learn it. Every single school in America teaches it.
And
you know?
That's what's so frustrating. And I'm sorry. Although, I mean, sorry, not sorry. But, like, not just white people. Like, people in general, stop expecting the emotional labor of somebody else to be the thing that changes your mind.
Yeah.
You shouldn't need to meet a gay couple to be like, oh, this is okay.
Oh, they're just people.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, stop expecting in your personal interactions with oppressed people or minorities to be the thing that changes your mind. Like, that's, it's
just
not
fair.
Just don't
be fucking hateful.
Just don't be shitty in the first place.
Yeah.
Let's talk about yours.
Oh, did you have this one too?
I didn't, but
okay,
let's talk about this one before.
Do you have an ender?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, so I want to talk about Alex Trebek. Did you grow up watching Jeopardy at all?
Yes.
Okay, so I never really did,
loved it.
My boss loves Jeopardy. And so it's on every night at work. And I'm always like, God, I'm the stupidest person in the world. So
I mean,
like,
yes, I do feel that way.
And he's got like a little calendar. So every day there's like a question. So I've kind of been around it the last year or so more than I had been previously. But the host of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek, revealed on Wednesday that he has been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Most patients with pancreatic cancer have a 5-year survival rate of 7%.
And so he's stage 4.
And he's stage 4. So he came out with an announcement that said, just like the 50,000 other people in the United States each year, this week I was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. He says he also plans to beat the low survival rate statistics for this disease.
I gotta say, when I saw him give that announcement, like, I didn't even know that I was emotionally attached to Alex Trebek.
Well, because he's just like, kind of like that figure that's around.
You just don't think he's ever gonna die. Yeah. Like, you just, like, he's always gonna be around.
Yeah.
Like, he's always gonna be hosting Jeopardy. Like, he's been hosting for all of my... I mean, I don't remember a time in my childhood without
Alex Trebek.
Alex Trebek, yeah.
Exactly. I've always known who he was, you know? So he actually intends to keep working as well. He says, truth be told, I have to, because under the terms of my contract, I have to host Jeopardy for 3 more years.
Oh, God, what a beautiful man.
So that's all I really have on that, but I wanted to bring that
yeah,
to
at least, like, touch on it for
attention.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, man, stage 4 pancreatic cancer, that's... a scary, but his humor surrounding it and his hope.
You know what?
I think is really
that
admirable.
Shit will get you through. Like, I'm not going to put everything out there because it's not my business. But like, someone very close to me a couple of years ago was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and they were like, "The likelihood of you surviving this is super low."
And they were like, "Fuck that."
And you know what? He wasn't even really like, fuck that, but, like, he handled it with so much humor. Like, he just moved ahead.
Yeah.
He, like, he did everything he was supposed to do, and along the way, he was just making joke after joke about, like, going and getting his treatments done, even when he was very sick. And he was just like, we're just going to handle this, basically. And now he's clean. He's completely in remission. So
that's amazing.
It is possible. Like, it is totally possible. And, like, I wish him and his family just the most, like...
I know.
I'm sending all my love.
Yeah, same.
Okay, so the headline for this that I wrote down was, R. Kelly has lost his goddamn mind. Did you see that interview?
I sent you the video.
Oh, my God.
Wait, can we like, play that video through the microphone that I sent you?
Sure, yeah.
Let me find it.
Quit playing. Robert. I didn't do this stuff. This is not me. I'm fighting for my life. Y'all killing me with this quit playing.
This shit is like
it is
the most bananas. Like the I was at work and it was on, and like the woman I was with, like, we stopped what we were doing and like we watched it, and it was that part and like the little bit like before and after that, and it was so, I was like, you don't look unhinged at all.
Yeah,
like,
you look totally sane.
You look so innocent. Like, here's the thing. Like, an innocent person doesn't respond.
Shit.
And you hear him there, and he's making faces there like he's crying. But there are no tears.
No tears. He's just having a pity party for himself. He's like, my life is over.
Yeah, like, fuck you. So he has been charged with 10 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse, and authorities say that 3 of the 4 alleged victims were underage when the crimes happened. He's pleaded not guilty. Mm-hmm. The interview is bananas, guys. Like, seriously, I'm not going to say watch it because part of me is like, I almost didn't watch it because I was like, I don't know if I want to give this guy attention.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking about watching it, it can be interesting because
Gail
fucking bless Gail. Like, Gail King, who's doing the interview, she doesn't go easy on him. She doesn't let anything pass her by. She calls him on his bullshit, like, consistently throughout the interview, and including when he says that every woman, and in fact every person in that documentary, is lying on him. Yeah, they're lying on me. And she points out,
you were lying on them when they were underage, motherfucker.
Oh, but she points out that it doesn't really make sense that all of these women who do not know each other would come forward with such similar stories. And he vehemently denies ever having sex with anyone under under 17, which we know is not true because he married Aaliyah when she was 15.
Yeah, exactly.
So we know that that's not true. And Gail tells him this. She's like, she's like, this is really hard to believe. Like, you understand that this is really hard to believe. And this it's at this point that he starts to get, like, defensive. Like, very defensive in the way that, like, no innocent person gets defensive. He looks unhinged. He, like, he gets up.
Yeah.
He starts talking directly to camera at one point, which I'm just like, what the fuck are you doing?
Don't look into my soul.
Yeah, he starts screaming and pacing. And at one point, like, his publicist has to step in because I was just like, his PR people must be in a panic right now. And his publicist does have to step in. They have to stop the interview and, like, calm him down before they can go forward. And he says that his only mistake is that he... the only mistake he's made is having too big a heart. His heart is too big, and he just wants to help these girls whose parents have just, like, left them at his... He goes from saying that he has no idea about, like, anything to do with these girls, and then the next thing...
he was trying to save them.
Save them because their parents were such shitty people that they, like... Exactly.
Sure.
So, and Gail, you know... To her credit, like, she does point out to him, she's like, it sounds like you're trying to play the victim here. Are you trying to play the victim here? Like, this is what this sounds like right now.
Gorgeous woman.
And it's a very bad look for him because he appears to be, like, big and domineering.
I'm just kind of surprised that he even, like, took that interview.
I think he's a narcissist or, like, has narcissistic tendencies.
Right.
I honestly feel like...
I think that's pretty obvious because he... Well, and honestly, so I only watched the first two episodes of the documentary because I don't have cable or Lifetime. But, like, he got away with it for so long.
Right.
Even when people knew, like, he still got away with it because people loved his music and were just kind of like, oh, you know, brush
it off. He had so many enablers for so long.
That I think people, he felt very untouchable.
Absolutely. And have you heard that, have you heard that theory that famous people become kind of, like, arrested in development at the age in which they've become famous?
I mean, I've heard something similar, and I definitely would believe that. I mean, I think if you look at, like, a lot of child stars, like, Justin Bieber came to my mind.
Yeah.
Because he was so young, and then you look at kind of, like, the string of bad behavior he went through for
I think it's very, very hard to mature at a normal rate.
Especially when you're around a lot of yes men.
Exactly. If you become famous very young, I think, or, you know, fairly young, I think R. Kelly was coming into fame in his late teens or his very early 20s.
Well, and he was also told when he was even younger by, like, music teachers and people around him just how talented he was. So even if he didn't have that, like, fame right away.
He had a lot of things working against him as far as, like, maturing in a normal way because, like, he was sexually abused very young and then he dropped out of high school at 17 and then... so he had a lot of things that kind of stood in his way of, like, maturing in a normal way. I genuinely feel that he chose to take this interview probably against the advice of his PR people.
Yeah.
Because
like he knew what they were going to talk about,
Well, he's doing kind of classic narcissist behavior in that he... Everyone around him could say, like, this is a bad idea. The best thing for you to do is not to say anything.
Yeah.
Don't give them anything. Just don't do anything. And he'll say, no, 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 I'm so smart. I can convince them. I just need to talk to them, and I can convince them of whatever. Because he's thinking that the American public is stupid, and that Gail is stupid.
Him.
Yeah.
Boy, so Gail is not stupid. I have a question to you because I haven't seen it yet, but I really want to... I think it's called Finding Neverland.
Leaving Neverland.
What were your, like, thoughts on that growing up and thoughts on that now that it's kind of coming back into the spotlight?
I will be really honest. First of all, I have not seen Leaving Neverland
yet. I haven't either.
I don't know if I'm going to watch it. I haven't had enough time to watch anything. And the idea of sitting through 4 hours of... something that I know
I've heard it's horrific.
Is going to make me feel sick.
Yeah.
Is not high on my list of things I really want to do.
And then you shouldn't do it. But what are your thoughts on like the scandals and everything surrounding Michael Jackson?
And yeah, so I'm going to be real honest about like I'm totally, you've heard me on this podcast, you know me as a person, and I am down to cancel fucking whoever, whenever. Mm-hmm. I don't watch Roman Polanski movies, even though I really enjoy them. I don't watch Woody Allen movies, even though I really enjoy them. I don't listen to R. Kelly. I don't listen to Chris Brown, because I feel like it is important. This one is
hard.
Like, this one is so hard because, especially if you've spent any time, like, as a Black person who spent my summers, all of my summers, with all of my Black family at my grandparents' house, whatever, Black families in general, Michael Jackson, we worshipped Michael Jackson. We had all of his music videos on VHS tape. We had, you know, the Moonwalker movie. We had I watched the Jackson 5 made-for-TV movie, like, every summer. Like, it was, he was a massive icon whose music, I bought the 25th anniversary edition CD of Thriller, and I listened to it constantly, and I listened to the commentary behind the scenes, extra tracks, constantly. It was such a huge part of my formative years.
So what did you think about it, like, as you were growing up and these accusations were coming out?
I mean, I think I did what a lot of people did, in that it was before Me Too as well, where it's the same thing we did with R. Kelly, where we were kind of like, well, he was found not guilty, so
that's,
it's fine.
Of, that was kind of my
know,
reality
we know
as
he's
well.
Weird. We know he's weird, but we're, unless we have definitive proof, we're just going to put it out of our minds.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, hearing what I've heard about the documentary and some of the details is definitely changing my feelings.
It's time to stop listening to Michael Jackson.
You know,
Came on Shuffle
the other day, and I was like, it's kind of ruined for me.
As hard as it is for me to say that, like, it really is, because, like, such a formative part of my life. Like, it hurts me. It hurts me more than, like, losing Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
And there is part of it where, like, Bill Cosby, everything he did was so calculated, and he was very clearly a predator, whereas I do think Michael Jackson was sick and had a lot of problems.
Well, and then what you were saying about R. Kelly is what made me think about it, because we're talking about a child who was, both of them were abused young, rose to fame young, Michael Jackson especially,
highly abused.
Exactly. Yeah. So there are some deep-seated issues, and that's the thing, you know, that we, when we listen to our true crime podcasts or learn about these sexual predators, it's like, that doesn't forgive their actions and what they do.
It's
but
an
at
explanation.
The same time, it is an explanation.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for a while, I was the same way, where I was like, you know, who am I to say whether or not he did it or not? And I was kind of like, well, maybe he didn't. But then as I've gotten older, I'm kind of like,
well,
Why would these people put themselves out there?
I don't think they're lying at all.
No.
And, like, I do think
because
it's
because that's tarnishing their reputation.
They're not lying. I don't think they're lying. I think it's a nuanced conversation, not in that Michael Jackson was an abuser and maybe we need to stop idolizing him and, like, deifying him, but in that, like, have you heard the theory, and this makes so much sense to me, whether it's true or not, that Conrad Murray, the doctor for the Jackson family, like, came forward and said that, like, last year, I think, came forward and said that Joe Jackson, whenever Michael Jackson was going through puberty or getting ready to go through puberty at Motown, they were like, listen, the Jackson 5 is not going to be marketable anymore because Michael Jackson is, his voice is changing.
Yeah.
And all of these things, that Joe Jackson had him chemically castrated.
That's
and
what that, I was just going to say. Was he castrated?
In that he gave him pills that stopped his development. Which made sense to me in that, like, his voice really didn't change. His body didn't change very much. He seemed very asexual, and everything about him seemed like a seemed like a child.
Yeah.
In that Neverland is a child's imagination
Never
of
growing
what...
up.
And his house, it was, everything about it was just like, this is what a child would do with a lot of money.
Yeah.
And a lot of influence.
Yeah.
And so I think I kind of convinced myself that that was the case. I still think that might be the case.
I mean, I think that that is very real, but at the same time, he is an adult.
It doesn't excuse anything.
Yeah.
It makes me feel sad for him. I mean, I've always felt sad for him because I do feel like he was robbed of
a life. And I think you can do both. I don't think you have to immediately be like, fuck this person. I mean, yeah, fuck what he did.
Absolutely.
And oh my God, that's horrible.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you can still look at his life because his life has been so high profile for most of his life that we can really look at it and be like, wow, this person really went through it. So.
Right. And I will always, I do want to say for the record, as difficult as this is for me and as much as I do think like we can acknowledge mental illness or other things that are happening because even during that 2005 trial, this man was so clearly fucking unwell. Like he was like standing on cars. He was doing weird shit. He was so clearly unwell, and there were a lot of people around him who obviously, clearly facilitated his behavior with these kids. I will say absolutely 100% of the time, to the point of not listening to Michael Jackson anymore, I stand with the victims, like, always. Always. Like, I will never, ever choose...
The abuser.
Regardless of the reason, I will never choose the abuser over
Same.
The abused.
Like, I just can't. Like, you know, like I said, it came on Shuffle the other day, and I was like, I cannot listen to this. And today I was listening to someone talking about the documentary on another podcast, and I pulled into the gas station, and there was, like, an old Michael Jackson Pepsi ad, and I was like, oh.
Bad timing.
Such bad timing.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard, you know.
It is, and that's why I want to bring it up, because what
it's
you were
reckoning.
Saying about R. Kelly... You know, I don't think that Michael had the same kind of... I mean, I'm sure there was some narcissism going on because he was famous for so long. I think it just kind of comes with the territory. But I don't think it was the same kind of, like, calculated...
No, I don't think it was calculated. I think for Michael Jackson, it was a child's mind having a lot of fucking power.
Yeah.
Like, any kid... If you give a kid that much, like, power...
I'm going to make a theme park all to myself with
right,
my candy
and I'm
going to
get
friends.
What I want all of the time, anytime I want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like... And again, I say all this without having seen the documentary. Like, maybe I'll watch it and I'm like, oh, no, this guy was, like, a calculated fucking...
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm definitely going to watch it, and when I do, I'll fill you in.
Yeah, let me know, because... maybe I'll watch it, but maybe I won't.
Maybe, like, down the road you'll watch it.
Yeah, I just can't at this moment.
I feel you.
I'm not ready.
I feel you. Sorry to go off topic there.
No, it's good.
What you're talking about reminded me of it. So, you guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. We really appreciate it. Wow, I just blanked on everything we talk about at the end.
If you would like to send us any sister solidarity stories or any suggestions for us to do for Women's History Month, we also have our coming out episode coming up soon. So if you have any coming out stories, we would love to get those from you.
Love, love, love.
You can email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can also get us on Instagram, DM us at @angryneighborhoodfeminist. I am trying to get on Twitter more. I'm logging
in
maybe once or twice a week, so that's a big win for me.
Yeah.
So you can find us on Twitter at YANF Podcast, YANF Podcast. You can also get us on Facebook. We have a business page and a group page, and you can review us on our Facebook page or on Apple Podcasts. We love getting new reviews from you guys.
We love it.
It totally makes our week. So, yeah, I'm sorry, kind of, maybe, I don't know. It is in the name of our podcast, so I don't know how sorry I am, but I am...
Are you about to apologize
I
for being angry?
I am extra angry today.
That's fine.
I'm just extra, extra angry today.
Keegan,
so.
We are real human beings. Don't apologize for being angry.
Sometimes I'm sunshine, you know, but not today.
You know, and we also talked about a lot of really upsetting things.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's a way for us to talk about this shit and not be fucking angry, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, you guys, thank you so much. And with all that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye. Bye.